Today is another important milestone on the path to restoring economic opportunity for the American people. Accordingly, it is my pleasure and my honor to announce my nomination of Jerome Powell to be the next chairman of the Federal Reserve. Congratulations.
The growing list of powerful men caught in allegations of sexual harassment or abuse now claiming one of the British government's top brass. Defence Minister Michael Fallon stepping down from his position on Wednesday night, the first resignation in a sexual harassment scandal in the British Parliament.
This is a very corporate-friendly proposal. Corporate tax rates are slashed from 35% to 20%. The U.S. shifts from a worldwide tax system to a territorial system to allow our U.S. companies to compete more aggressively abroad. Mm-hmm. Those are the two largest pieces of this plan. And the winners, by and large, are shareholders of U.S. corporations.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It is November 3rd, 2017, and it's 5:11 in the morning. Glad you're here with us for our Friday edition of The Opening Bell and another business day. We have a good show for you coming up. We're going to be talking all kinds of economic news. Paul Nolte's here. We'll go over our portfolios as well. Paul from Kingsview Asset Management. Later in the program, it's costing more and more for people to care for family members and friends who are sick. Caregivers.com, caring.com will join us with the latest report on their caregivers. It is a lot of money, more than last year, and it's growing year by year. We'll have that for you in our second segment this morning. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Asian stocks mixed today in holiday-thin trading as investors digested uninspiring Chinese economic data, Donald Trump's pick for next Fed chair and the U.S. tax cut plan. China's service sector showed lackluster expansion last month, according to the latest Purchasing Managers Index, which rose from about a 21-month low, but remained weaker than average. You heard there in the opening montage, President Trump chose Fed Governor Jerome J. Powell to lead the Federal Reserve after current chair Janet Yellen's term ends in February. And Wall Street yesterday had a mixed finish. This morning on the markets, we'll see that Asian markets are generally in positive territory. In Europe, markets this morning generally positive as well. The DAX is up about a third, and the FTSE in London is up about a quarter. Futures in this country are pointing toward opening gains. The Dow futures up 38 right now. NASDAQ futures up 19, almost 20. And crude oil's at $54.81 a barrel. Lots of news yesterday. First, the news about the Federal Reserve chair, but the tax overhaul was in there as well. A watchdog group has crunched the numbers on the House GOP tax plan and has found the bulk of the tax cuts will go to businesses instead of individuals. The measures cut taxes by about $1.5 trillion over the coming decade, mixing tax cuts for businesses and individuals with repeal of deductions and other tax breaks. The Washington-based Committee for Responsible Federal Budget says corporations and other businesses get tax cuts netting about $1 trillion over that time, while individuals receive tax cuts totaling about $300 billion during that time. People inheriting multi-million-dollar estates would receive about $172 billion. We want to bring in Paul Nolte right off the bat here this morning. It's our regular Friday conversation with Paul. He is portfolio manager at Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul, happy Friday.
Happy Friday. Good morning.
I want to talk to you a little bit about the Fed chair announcement yesterday, the tax cut announcement. Both big news.
It was very big news yesterday. We were all, the economists among us, are very excited yesterday. We're all going into a economic coma, I guess, after the employment report later today. But I think really some of the takeaways when we take a look at Fed Chair, the new appointed Fed Chair, Jay Powell, some of the concerns that have come up, you know, everybody was like, oh, yes, he's going to be in a, he's going to be appointed. He's going to be pretty much along the same lines as Janet Yellen. No problem. Things are going to go smoothly. First thing that everybody talks about is the lack of a PhD and the next crisis that he faces is going to be a tough test. The reality is that every crisis that we've had has tested, you know, from Alan Greenspan, even Paul Volcker, right on through to Janet Yellen. So I think the fact that he doesn't have that PhD background when everybody else at the Fed does is actually a benefit for him, because he's going to be a little bit more of a consensus builder, trying to get different ideas from a variety of places and not be so regimented in his thought process.
Yeah, because I think we all make it sound like it's the Fed chair who does all of these, makes all of these decisions. This stuff doesn't happen in a vacuum. There's a whole bunch of people that work on monetary policy.
That's why it's called a committee.
Right.
Yes, there's a group of them, and he's been there. So it's not as though he's new to the Fed. He's been on the Fed board for a while. He was with the Carlyle Group in Washington, so he's been around the block more than a few times in a fairly variety of high profile positions. So I think he's a very good choice.
And the consensus building part of that, he's going to have very little consensus building to do, because there are a couple of openings on the committee that the president will be able to fill. We could speculate that those would be like-minded people, right?
It's possible. I mean, you know, John Taylor is still out as a possibility, and certainly he's a much more a monetary hawk, if you will, wanting to see interest rates a lot higher. So there's a few people out there yet, but yes, there's I think three more board positions yet to be filled. But again, Jay's, I think, going to be relying a little bit more on some of the staff as well that provide all of the preparation for a lot of the decision-making process. So it's going to be an interesting look. We won't really get a good idea on how he's doing or how he goes about handling the Fed probably until at least mid-year next year.
Right. And again, Janet Yellen's there until next February.
Right.
So it looks like whatever decisions will come again this year are already pretty much on the way.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about the tax cut bill yesterday that was announced, the tax bill. You heard us explaining it, the opening montage there. It looks like that from at least the early view is this is going to be good for business and shareholders.
And that's one of the things that, you know, certainly has been talked about, and one of the goals, I guess, of the both the administration as well as Congress was to really help out and do more for business. The big sticking point has been the taxes on earnings overseas. We tax that here in the United States. Many other countries do not. It's more domestic. A lot of businesses, wherever they are domiciled, they get taxed on the earnings within that country. We're different from that. We tax on earnings where no matter where you earn them. So that was the big takeaway, the thought being that if we can repatriate some of those dollars, lower taxes, and put us more in line with the rest of the world, we could see businesses spending a lot more, which ultimately will lead to jobs, which will ultimately lead to higher wages. That we'll get a better feel for that probably about 2-3 years out to see how that really plays out, though.
In the short term, we saw some opposition to this already forming yesterday, even among the Republicans. I think either way it goes, it's not going to happen by Thanksgiving, is it?
It's going to be a real struggle to make it to Thanksgiving to get it voted on. If you want to use the baseball analogy, now that we've wrapped up the season, we're probably in the fourth inning of this process. So we've got the House bill, we've got to reconcile with the Senate, we've got to get that through and voted on. They'll be gone for the Thanksgiving break, the Christmas break, so there's really not that many days, legislative days left to where they can vote on it. So our best guess is sometime first quarter next year this will ultimately get voted on. So really when you take a look at the bill, even in its current form, it's likely to change some between now and when it ultimately gets signed.
Paul, hang on. We're going to take a break here. We'll continue with Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management, our regular Friday talk with Paul.
ABC News, Wall Street Now. Ahead of the October jobs report, the Labor Department has announced applications for jobless aid fell 5,000 to a seasonally adjusted 229,000 last week. The four-week average dropped to a 44-year low of 232,500, matching the four-week average from April of 1973, when there was a smaller population and fewer total workers. The total number of people collecting benefits is also at a 44-year low. a day after Papa John's blamed its weaker sales on the controversy over NFL protests during the national anthem. Yum Brands, which owns KFC, Pizza Hut, and Taco Bell, said it saw no effect on sales due to declining NFL viewership. Sales at Pizza Hut's established locations rose 1%, but that growth came from locations outside the U.S. Dave Schreiber, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. 523 here on The Opening Bell. Paul Nolte is here from Kingsview Asset Management. Kingsview.com is where you can find him and his colleagues. Paul, the jobs report today, all signs point to...
Good.
Yeah, yeah, good, yeah.
Given the fact that we lost jobs last month, but again, we're talking about hurricane still impacted data. So I think when you take a look, and the projection for this month is north of 300,000 new jobs. And in a typical month, that would be a lot of celebration and certainly worries about a much tighter Fed policy. But the fact that we lost jobs last month, I think you have to take an average of the last two or three to kind of smooth things out here a little bit. When we get to December, early December, when they release the November data, I think we'll start to see more of a normal jobs picture. So if we take that average, you're looking at about 150,000 to 160,000 new jobs. It's a little bit slower than what we've seen over the summer months. But still pretty respectable numbers.
Because the idea is that some of the people who may have lost their jobs with the hurricanes are now getting those jobs back. Is that why we would see that aberration?
Well, they weren't working. The survey asks you, are you currently working? Mm-hmm. Well, no, I'm not, because the company is underwater right now, literally. Right.
And now they are, some of them, most
right.
of them are.
Yeah,
back.
They most of them are back.
We'll be watching the wages part of this too. I know there's been some indication that that's ticking up in some sectors.
We're starting to see manufacturing pick up. We're starting to see a little bit more economic growth here in the United States, and it should translate through to higher wages. And one of the areas that we're going to be looking at is the construction and manufacturing sectors to see if we're getting that wage growth. In past reports, we were getting some wage growth, but it was from the lower end of the wage scale. So services, restaurants, bars, et cetera, where wages don't tend to be very high. We really want to see it more in the construction manufacturing sector. So that's one of the areas you're going to be looking at. We'd like to see wage growth ultimately a little bit north of 3%. We've been going around 2.5%. Historically, that's been on the low end of the range, between 2% and 4% over the last 30 years or so. So we'd like to see that a little bit north of 3%, and it'll take us a little while to get there.
A big week for earnings as well. I wish I had some Apple stock.
We do.
Did really well.
We are pretty loaded up on the technology sector, and we've talked about that in the past. It's one of the areas where we're seeing very good revenue growth. We're seeing, obviously, very good earnings growth and cash flow. So from Amazon, Apple, the FANG stocks, if you will. But even if you look outside that sector, semiconductors, et cetera, are doing very well. So technology is one of those bright stars in the marketplace. Outside of that, we're seeing still a pretty good earnings season. And I think the market's been bolstered here a little bit, as we talked earlier about the tax bill. The lower taxes are going to generate much better earnings per share for shareholders, and that could also continue to boost the stock market.
What should we be doing with our portfolios in light of all of this?
It's status quo. I don't think we're heading for a recession anytime soon, so the equity markets still look okay if they still are overvalued, which is what we've been talking about ad nauseum. It's still very highly valued, but the earnings have been coming through. Still favoring technology as a general sector within the United States. Still like very much the international sector. Emerging markets last month were up north of 3%, while the U.S. still did well in the month of October, which is historically a poor month for stocks. It was up over 2%, but the better opportunities still internationally versus in the U.S.
All right, Paul, have a great weekend. We'll see you again here next Friday.
I'll be here.
All right, Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Again, kingsview.com online.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. Papa John's may be blaming NFL anthem protests for its rough third quarter, But there's another, more pressing factor facing the pizza chain, Chicago-based Grubhub. For decades, customers had really two delivery options, pizza and Chinese. That's not the case anymore, as companies like Grubhub are giving football fans thousands of food options at their fingertips. And in 2016, Grubhub orders made up 40% of all online food delivery, nearly as much as Papa John's, Pizza Hut, and Domino's combined. We now know how much HubSpot paid for Chicago startup Motion AI. According to a filing, HubSpot paid $9 million for the startup, which makes it easy for brands to launch their own chatbot services. And Jewel Osco is planning to launch its own delivery service next week, competing with Peapod and Amazon. Jewel will handle fulfillment and delivery itself instead of partnering with a third-party delivery service. That's today's NO Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at chicagono.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:38 here on our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. A new report is out about the status of caregivers and how much mental anguish and time and money they're spending on caring for friends, family, and loved ones. The report comes from Caring.com. We're happy to have Tim Sullivan, who's the vice president of Caring.com, with us this morning via Skype from San Francisco. Tim, what is the headline from this new report?
The headline finding is that 44% of family caregivers spend $5,000 or more per year on caregiving expenses. Beyond that, 18% spend between $5,000 and $10,000. 10% between 10 and 20,000, 6% spend more than 50,000 more per year. So it means that if you find yourself in the role of family caregiver, it can have a really significant impact on your life and finances.
On the surface of it, it shows that basically half of the people out there are caring for somebody in some way, doesn't it?
Yeah, certainly there are more and more caregivers every year as baby boomers age and their parents age into the age ranges where diminished capabilities, which are a reality of aging in a lot of cases, require us to help care for someone we love.
What are the costs? What do they cover? What things?
The costs are diverse. So you're caring for a living being, and as a result, you need to contribute to the cost of maintaining their life. So that includes things like food and clothing, which was one of the most common expenses, transportation, medications, and other costs, travel to care for your loved one. So some people are caring for a loved one who's in another city or another state, and so they incur travel expenses. And then there's other things like in-home care services or assisted living facilities, which are, you know, explicit services that you might need for somebody who's really needs a lot of care.
Tim, what are the misconceptions here? I guess do most of us think that A, this will not happen to us, and B, that this was somehow funded by insurance or some other third party and not it won't have to be paid for by us?
In the big picture, this is an experience that a lot of people don't see coming. Whether you're talking about it from the financial angle, planning for it the way we plan for, say, college or retirement, we don't talk about it as a life event that we should all be thinking about and anticipating. Similarly, we don't necessarily anticipate the impact on our lives, whether you have the means or not. Caring for somebody takes a lot of thought, effort, and work, as well as emotional investment. It can be really hard.
Let's talk about that. I mean, because for most of the caregivers, they say they're concerned, lots of worry involved there. I'm guessing this weighs heavily on the health of the people who are doing the caring.
Oh, that is absolutely the case. One of the questions we always ask is who's caring for the caregivers? And there's a range of issues that are commonly encountered, particularly around guilt. A lot of people think that they're not doing a good enough job, and that's absolutely not true. This is a really challenging thing, and you need to go easy on yourself because you're probably doing a great job, and it's one of the most difficult things that a lot of people encounter.
One of the other statistics that jumps off the page is 68% of caregivers who have a job who work report that caregiving has had a negative impact on their job. This is impacting people's employment, isn't it?
Yeah, it's absolutely the case. More than half of the people in our survey said they missed one or more weeks of work. 31% mentioned that they arrive late or early because of a conflict due to caregiving. And in terms of the raw labor of providing care for another human being, 38% of those surveyed said they spend more than 30 hours per week. So it's another job on top of your job in many cases.
Yeah. So if you're working 40 hours a week, you're spending a total of 70 hours doing all of this stuff. Let's start. I'm going to go back and hit a couple of things, but I'm going to start with that. Knowing these statistics now, how can we first prepare ourselves for this, I guess? And then how important is our employer in all of this?
Your employer is really important. There's the Family Medical Leave Act, which you could talk to your HR about. It lets you take off a certain amount of unpaid leave each year, similar to when somebody's taking maternity leave like that. So employers knowing about your situation should have some flexibility to help you to get through it. But one of the most important things you can do is budget for it. So I quoted some of the costs of caregiving at the top, $5,000 a year for 44% of our survey respondents. You know, when you are thinking about retirement and allotting money for, say, travel or any other thing, anticipate that you might need to sock aside some money to pay for costs like this. Another thing that's really important is to know what benefits are available to you. It can be a little bit tedious to go online and sort of research all of that, but it is more than worth it, particularly if you find that there are benefits available to you that you didn't know about. Veterans benefits is a common example. One other thing folks can do is talk to a geriatric care manager. Care managers are people who coordinate care for those who are caring for a loved one. They are well versed in all of the services and the emotional stress and, you know, the financial issues. And even if you don't have the means to retain one for an ongoing period of time, that initial consultation can be really helpful in helping you wrap your head around what your needs are going to be.
90% of caregivers are concerned about affordable health care going forward. How much has this impacted the mindset of people who are caregivers? The debate we've been having in the last 6 months over the future of Obamacare, of the Affordable Care Act. I know states like Illinois have been cutting Medicare and Medicaid. The federal government's doing the same thing. What's the future look like in this area?
Well, I think it's one of uncertainty. You mentioned sort of ongoing political issues, which absolutely have to be on the mind of people who are caring for parents. What affects healthcare affects how we provide care. And a lot of people rely on Medicare and Medicaid to help them pay for medications and doctor visits and the like. I think that until those uncertainties are resolved, this anxiety is going to continue.
On the anxiety front, too, we talked earlier about the mental health of caregivers. Is there a place where folks can find help? Is there a central location? I know you talked about the caregiving specialist earlier. Could that person also help with the mental aspect of this?
I don't think that sort of mental health care for the caregiver is central to what geriatric care managers do. I'd actually encourage people to visit our website, caring.com, where we have a wealth of articles and Q&A for people who have these concerns. Another resource that's good is your area agency on aging. They're an agency that can sort of let you know about local services for seniors in your area.
Finally, this is a problem now, but with the aging population and all the baby boomers moving into retirement years, this problem's going to get worse, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think that more and more people are going to find themselves in these circumstances. And one can only hope that like as a culture, we'll do a better job of managing and preparing for them.
You mentioned finding more information at caring.com. Part of that, too, is reaching out to other people who are in a similar situation as you are, right? Finding a support group.
Yeah, that's absolutely the case. We have support groups where people dealing with similar caregiving issues, whether it's an age-related disease or caregiver stress, can come to our site and get tips and talk and vent and hear from others who are dealing with the exact same things that they are. One of the sort of common experiences for caregivers is that they feel isolated. You know, it's a new experience, and it's not one that their social group is necessarily experiencing all at the same time. So finding another voice out there who knows what you're going through and can identify with you can be really helpful. And you can find that at our support groups.
Tim, we appreciate you joining us this morning and providing us with this insight.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Tim Sullivan is the vice president at caring.com with us via Skype this morning from San Francisco. You can find more again at caring.com and follow them on Twitter at caring.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, futures are pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures up 43. NASDAQ futures are up 22 this morning. Let's get the latest on commodities and agriculture. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
And good morning to you, Steve, as I'm getting ready to head out to Kansas City this morning. Last week, it was the high schoolers, basically, in the FFA meeting in Indianapolis, a great convention. And this week, it's a step up, basically, the Agriculture Future of America, AFA, made up mainly of college students who are pursuing agricultural courses and careers, and they come together once a year in Kansas City. There will be about 800 delegates from 43 states and 90 colleges getting together in Kansas City today through Sunday morning. So I'm looking forward to joining again these young up-and-coming agricultural producers and agricultural business people.
So. Well, I know you often say that this is the time of the year that reinvigorates you when you get to be with these young folks. So what did you see from the future farmers that helped do that for you this year?
Just about everything. There were 67,000 of them in the city of Indianapolis. And every year they just get brighter and brighter. I mean, these are young people in high school who have already mapped out their career plans and the road to get to what they want to accomplish. But their enthusiasm, their infectious enthusiasm for agriculture and agriculture careers, they spend 2 days in their convention of 2 days of service where they go to parks and go to senior citizen homes in Indianapolis and do things to fix it up. But then they conduct their business, and they do that. They understand parliamentary procedure, Steve, and they run the meetings that way. But the enthusiasm and the looking beyond the U.S., looking to other countries of the world where we're going to have to produce more of the food, since 95% of the people on the planet live outside the United States. And it's just the enthusiasm and the planning. I think when I was their age, my main asset was an $18 used bicycle. There are some of these people, young adults, who have already established businesses worth $400,000.
Yeah, and as I read about, especially some of the college kids, They're already solving problems that are going to be presenting to us in the future.
That's right. And, you know, we salute four of the FFA members as the stars of America. It's agri-science and agricultural placement, agribusiness, and then, of course, the one that the FFA has had since its founding in 1928, the American Star Farmer. And so you cover all bases. At one time, Steve, we called it, when I was a member, we called it the Future Farmers of America. But it's so much beyond cattle and hogs and wheat and corn that we had to change the name to the FFA organization to cover all of the areas of agriculture that they're working in today. So great organization.
How's harvest going? Is it almost done?
Soybeans pretty well done. Corn still quite a ways to go. And some of the showers, kind of a welcome relief for farmers. It gave them a day of rest out of the combine cab. But they're continuing to let Mother Nature drive the corn crop down. And luckily, we have not had any weather that has blown the crop down, except we talked to a farm broadcaster in Nebraska yesterday, and they have a lot of corn that's been blown down. And then when you harvest it, you can only harvest one direction to pick it up and get as much of it as you can. So still a challenge out there, but I think we'll meet the goal of having the combine parked by Thanksgiving.
What's on the morning show tomorrow?
The morning show, Max will be doing that show, and we'll be sharing some of the stories of the FFA stars and national officers, and then whatever Max wants to plug into the show. So that will be in his bailiwick because I'll be in Kansas City.
All right, Orion, thank you. Have a great weekend. Safe travels.
Thank you.
All right, Orion Samuelson with us. It's the morning show tomorrow morning, and Max Armstrong will be doing the duties, as you heard Orion say, from 5 to 6 o'clock right here on 720 WGN. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday, November 3rd. Two major economic reports from the government today. Commerce Department reports on the U.S. trade gap for September and U.S. factory orders for the month. Also, the big jobs report expected out later today as well. And then, of course, the big story that some of you are probably even standing in line for right now, the Apple iPhone goes on sale at stores today. The iPhone X is the big one. But for everybody else, we'll be watching the jobs report coming out at mid-morning. That's some of the things that could move the markets on this Friday, November 3rd.